All my acquaintances are sound and sane persons, some also knowing the difference between clairvoyance and projection, and these occurrences cannot be explained otherwise than by assuming a subtle body capable of separating from the material body in various degrees. Experiences of exteriorization have never been proved to be a sign of insanity. But individuals having repeated spontaneous experience of projection should have access to knowledge and the advice of trustworthy persons having studied in this field. Next headline, a glance at history. If astral projection is a fact and a general possibility for man, we must expect to find traces of it in history. Indeed, the idea of a normally invisible subtle body is found in the East, in Egypt and in Greece. The Neoplatonists called the fluidic double astroid, which means brilliant as a star, a name which seems to be related to the word astral. Similar ideas have been found to exist all over the world with cultured nations as well as with primitive races. Also, a number of spontaneous cases are known from classic literature. The first experiments, throwing some light on our problem, were conducted in connection with mesmerism, formerly called animal magnetism or now biomagnetism, which was the forerunner of modern psychic investigation and was introduced by Anton Mesmer, 1734-1815, for healing. Using magnetic passes, moving the hands over and almost touching the body of the subject, the somnambulic state was induced. This condition should not be confused with sleepwalking or with hypnosis. In one phase, called the lucid state, suitable subjects were able to see their body and the bodies of others as if transparent, could observe the various organs and describe their functions and state of health. They were also able to project and to travel to other places and report what they observed there. The result of the knowledge gained by mesmerism is reflected by an interesting German book by Johann H. Jung, published in 1809 and entitled Theorie der Geisterkunde, Theory of Spirit Knowledge. It contains a detailed account of a successful experimental and evidential astral projection from the east of the USA to London, which case he had from a reliable source and which he considered a reliable historic fact. In discussing this case, he shows an astonishing insight into these matters. A more recent and comprehensive study of the subtle body was given in 1888 by Carl Duprell's book Die Monistische Seele in Lehre, Monistic Theory of the Soul, the title of which is rather misleading. This survey considers old and modern knowledge. It discusses feelings of integrity, of amputated limbs, various kinds of apparitions, sleepwalking, subjective experiences and the difference between clairvoyance and astral traveling. Duprell knows that the double, when causing an apparition, sometimes reflects the situation of the material body, as by the clothing, or wounds and other details, and sometimes not. He cites the opinion of Paracelsus that physical deformities and even mental deficiencies are due to defects on the material side only, and that after death the sidereal body, equals astral body, does not show these defects. He discusses the famous case of the school teacher, Miss Sage, whose double separated often spontaneously, against her will, and which was seen in various degrees of solidity by all her pupils, fellow teachers and servants of the boarding school. This case goes far to prove the reality of the human subtle body. Duprell also cites cases when physical effects were produced by the double, as blowing out a candle or writing on a slate. He knows of repercussion observed in the mesmeric state when, if the exteriorized double is pricked by a needle, the material body may show a corresponding wound and lose some blood. He calls subjective experimental projections autosomnambulism and the agent an ideosomnambulist. In view of the wealth of material presented by Duprell, it is not surprising that he was convinced of the reality of a normally invisible double, which he thinks to be the product of the organizing soul and the thinking soul, notions which are due to Aristotle. Next headline, bilocation. The simultaneous observation of a person in two different places is called bilocation, and when seen in three different places, trilocation. These terms are old and were introduced by clerics because such cases were first reported of saints. Whilst normally the projected double is invisible and only seen by clairvoyant people, In the bilocation it has manifested to such a degree as to be seen by everybody, and also produces material effects and behaves like a normal person. In his valuable book Phenomena of Bilocation, the Italian researcher Ernesto Bocciano uses the term to cover all kinds of astral projection, but such use should be discouraged. An often cited case refers to the Spanish nun Maria de Regreda, who, over 100 times, fell into a deep lethargy, during which she felt herself transported over the seas to New Mexico, to the Indians, to whom she preached the gospel. The monk Benavides, who lived in Mexico, corroborated many details when he visited Europe in 1630. Here the agent's body is in a death-like condition during the projection. As Duprel pointed out, the Sanskrit term Majavirupa denotes a deliberate astral projection. The adepts of India, possessing this art, are supposed to dispose of such an abundance of vitality and consciousness that they can produce a true bilocation, which means being active and conscious in two places at the same time. This must be difficult to attain, and the term, perhaps, designates more an ideal than an established reality. If we turn to the modern book of Paramahamsa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi, we find but one example of a projection. A yogi, while sitting in meditation, projects his double and appears to a friend in the street and gives him a message, the friend thinking him materially present and hearing his voice, but even here the material body was not active. Still, if correctly reported, it is a successful willful projection of an evidential kind. We might assume the next best approach to activity to be an action which can be maintained almost subconsciously, like walking. Such a case was reported by Dr. J. Kerner, cited after Duprel. A judge F. sent his clerk to a neighboring village on an errand. After a while the clerk entered the room of the judge and took a book out of the bookcase. Astonished, the judge asked angrily why he hadn't gone yet. Thereupon the clerk disappeared in the air, the book fell on the floor and the judge put it, open as it was, on the table. When the clerk returned he was questioned. He had walked in company of a friend, with whom he had had a discussion about a plant they had found. He had been sure of his opinion and said, that if he were at home, he would be able to open the page of the book of Linnaeus, where the information would be found. It was indeed this book and this page that was open on the table. Here the double produced astonishing material effects by fetching a book and opening it. Still more interesting is the fact that we must assume the agent's material body to have been walking, though we should like to have a statement to the effect that he did not sit or lie down for a rest on his way to the village. In this as well as in some modern cases the agent is not conscious of having projected, although the double was capable of handling material objects. This rather bewildering aspect of the problem shows its complexity, and that consciousness and also memory must be independent of the process of exteriorization. Similar spontaneous cases are known, in which an agent had the wish to be at some place and thereby produced an apparition of himself. But here we have to consider the possibility of telepathic hallucinations. In some cases the agents were active, conscious or only momentarily absent-minded. Emanations and exteriorization. Another line of approach is the study of fluids emanating from the human body and especially from the hands, the head and some other parts. Reichenbach, who investigated this between 1844 and 1865, called this radiation the odic flame aurid. Sensitive persons observed it as a luminous smoke, also visible at the poles of large magnets and electromagnets. The right side of the human body and the positive pole of a magnet show a blue emanation, the left side and the negative pole an orange or reddish emanation. The French investigator Colonel de Roches repeated these tests and believed these colors to be of a physical nature because, by using two nickel prisms, this light could be made to disappear to the eye of the sensitive persons observing. He introduced the method of experimenting with two mesmerized subjects, one to be experimented upon, the other being clairvoyant through the process to observe and report the proceedings. In two books, The Exteriorization of Sensibility and The Exteriorization of Motricity, Rogers published his findings. By magnetic passes, the sensibility, instead of being located in the skin, can be made to appear in a series of layers around the body, the first layer in a distance of 1.5 inches, the following about double that distance apart. These fluidic emanations were almost material and for some time could be stored in a glass of water or in other substances. When continuing with the magnetic passes, he observed the formation of half a phantom on each side, which were of the color mentioned above, and the subsequent union of the two halves, usually on the left side. H. Derville, a French magnetizer, repeated these investigations in the years 1907 and 1908, and published a book, Le Fantôme des Vivants, The Phantom of the Living. Experimenting with several sensitives and using magnetic passes, he could exteriorize the sensitivity up to 3 yards. The fluidic emanations then concentrated into two columns of whitish or gray color, one on each side of the subject. If the magnetizing was continued, the two halves united as mentioned above. At this moment, the phantom had no definite form but was a cloud which gradually, the magnetic passes being continued, took the exact form of the subject and became luminous, showing blue on the right, orange on the left side. It also copied the movements of the material body. With more magnetic passes, the double became more independent and could be told to do this or that, such as to sitting on a chair or walk into an adjoining room. Still, it not always obeyed either the investigator or the subject. If the latter was brought back into the normal state too quickly, it suffered a kind of muscular trepidation. A fluidic cord was observed, about the size of a finger, round or flat, connecting subject and double, which started from some point near the spleen, or from the top of the head for some subjects, and ending at the corresponding point on the double. Clairvoyants observed this cord as carrying two currents. One current of life force from the material body to the phantom, on the lower side of the cord, and a second current, more luminous and seemingly more refined, from the phantom to the material body, on the upper side. If somebody walked into the cord, the medium felt a pull as if from a string. The colors seen around the material body by clairvoyants, the so-called aura, disappeared after a full exteriorization, and the double then displayed these colors with all details. The subjects declared that all perception, as seeing and hearing, was transferred into the double. If the material body spoke, this was likened to a mechanical action directed from the double, and according to Derville is only possible because of the magnetizing. Experimenting in a dark room, Derville found the double able to see and recognize small objects which a third person held before the face of the double, while the subject could not discern them, if they were held before the material body. The same was found to be true of the senses of touch, smell and taste. It was possible to order the double to knock on a table, to press down a balance, to move a chair and a small table. When the double was told to mount a balance, its weight was about 1 ounce. When material effects were to be produced by the double, it became denser and its hands were no longer transparent to the clairvoyant. According to the sensitives, this density results from taking in substances from the atmosphere or from surrounding objects. As an exception, the double may get more luminous when producing material effects. Most people felt a passing double as a cool breath. Its hands, when touching the forehead of a clairvoyant, seemed cold and were seen to be luminous and with the 3 rings which the subject wore at the time. 2 luminous screens exposed to light and then kept in darkness for some 4 days, appeared dark in the darkened room. 1 screen was put on the material knees of the subject and it remained dark, the other was put on the chair where the double had been told to sit and the screen emitted light immediately, a fact corroborated by photographing the screens. All sensitives saw the double taller than the material body. In over 60 trials, only 1 faint photograph of a double could be obtained, at a moment when it was specially dense and luminous. A well-developed double seems to be composed of vibrating luminous particles, showing also a wave motion coming from 2 centers, one the solar plexus, the other the vortex of the head. Derville also tried experimental excursions. First with Mr. Rousseau, born 1885, who since childhood had experienced spontaneous projections, whom he asked to project and visit him at a certain time. Two somnambules with exteriorized doubles were ready and saw a ghost coming and sitting in a chair, and were rather afraid of it. A luminous screen lying on that chair was visibly brighter afterwards. Mr. Uso reported to have sent his double, felt it going and coming back, but could not remember what happened at Derville's house. Thus the agent's consciousness remained with the physical body in bed. In another experiment, one somnambule was told to send her double to his house at a certain time. There the double was actually observed by two magnetized subjects and recognized. This and similar experiments were repeated with other subjects, and some of them could remember what happened during their excursion. In such experimental excursions, the double was clad in a fluidic veil. A nebulous veil was also around the head, though the face was clearly visible, and the body was hidden behind a drapery. When the double was asked to visit some place, a most curious detail was observed. The double seemed to split. It became more luminous, but the coloring went back into the physical body, which took on the normal polarized color of blue and orange. The double was then whitish and went through the wall on its errand. On coming back, still luminous in white brightness, the colors shifted again from the subject to the double. Derville explains this by assuming that the colored part belongs to the etheric body, the white part to the astral body. If a sensitive person exteriorizes spontaneously, she sees the double in a white brightness. According to Derville, the spirits of the deceased are seen by the sensitives in similar fashion. Another detail, the mesmerized subjects sometimes saw a luminous sphere above the double with a second cord between them. The sensitives thought this sphere to be the seat of the will. These experiments were continued by Charles Lancelin, who succeeded in getting fingerprints of the exteriorized double, as reported in his book of 544 pages, Méthode de Doublement Personnel, Method of Personal Exteriorization, published in 1913. Next headline, Some Theoretical Considerations. The investigations of H. Derville have been cited at some length, because of their theoretical importance and because they point the way to more experimental work. The use of the mesmeric state or of hypnotism for this kind of work is open to criticism. There is the danger that the operator may suggest his preconceived ideas to the subject and thus falsify the results. De Rochers as well as Derville tried to avoid these possible pitfalls. As soon as we have facts to show that the double itself is of a complex structure, we need terms and a working hypothesis to distinguish its various parts. Old teachings of mysticism claim to know the various parts constituting the human being. Their terms may serve as a first step towards a more complete and substantial theory based on observed facts. These teachings distinguish four bodies: physical, etheric, astral, mental. The etheric body has the same shape as the material but is slightly larger, and the protruding part is called the aura, which is seen by sensitives as a colored halo around the material body. The etheric body is said to be responsible for the chemical and other processes occurring in the material body and supposed to dissolve shortly after death, thus permitting corruption of the corpse. And emanations mentioned may be connected with the etheric body. The astral body is said to be of a bluish color and appears as the finer and luminous copy of the physical body. It is the seat of passions and during sleep is said to hover above and close to the physical body. It can cause apparitions of the dying and the dead, and appears in the same clothes as the physical body, but sometimes looks as if clad in white gossamer. It is dissolved when the individual is able to pass on to higher spheres of the spirit world. The mental body is described as of oval shape and not a duplicate of the material body during earth life. As the name implies, it is the seat of thought and other mental faculties. We have seen that Derville distinguished between the etheric and the astral bodies, and the luminous sphere mentioned by him could be the mental body. The assumption of four bodies, however, is but the first step for a theory. More detail is needed to explain the various kinds of memory and consciousness connected with a number of states, such as the normal waking state, conscious and unconscious astral projection, coma or deep lethargy, mesmeric states, hypnotism and others. To my knowledge, no attempt has yet been made to establish such a theory. In the meantime, the terms etheric and astral should be used with care. An example in which the consciousness may have been located in the mental body is the Marx case, reported by Muldoon. A lady had a number of different projections. In one of them she went to town one afternoon and suddenly found herself separated from her physical body, which continued to walk some distance in front of her. She observed it going into a grocer's shop, buying some things, paying for them and going home again. If the above-mentioned interpretation is correct, we must assume the material body, together with the etheric and the astral, acting normally as under a hypnotic suggestion, subconsciously carrying out her previously formulated wishes. For another possible explanation of such experiences, we may cite the Henry case, same source. A nurse assisting a doctor during an operation suddenly felt herself out of the body, standing in her double on the other side of the operating table and observing the work of her physical body, which continued to be actively engaged in its task of helping the surgeon, and without any volition on her part. After the operation, she felt herself floating over the table and re-entering her physical body. She explained the experience to herself by assuming that she fell into a trance and that her body was controlled by a spirit, though at the time she was not a spiritualist, but became one on account of it. This explanation requires the assumption that no clairvoyant powers were active, as otherwise she would have seen the supposed spirit. Next headline, the concept of repercussion. The sensations and eventually the result of all mishaps of the phantom body may afterwards show on the material body. In D'Urville's experiments, if the double was touched, the subject would feel it; if it was scratched, hurt with needles or had inadvertently knocked against some furniture, the skin of the subject would show corresponding marks, stripes or blue patches. This fact is called repercussion, because the condition of the double is thrown back onto the material body. In normal astral projection, no repercussion is observed. The double passes through walls and persons without any after effects. This might be explained by assuming that the etheric body is not involved in normal astral traveling but responsible for repercussion. Thus, the etheric body would participate whenever physical effects are to be accomplished. Repercussion or similar phenomena have been observed in the seance room with physical mediumship. A shock to, or attacking a materialized form may cause serious damage to the medium's body. Also, when psychic structures came into contact with colored substances, the coloring was sometimes found on the body of the medium, even when there was no possibility of material contact. The word repercussion should not be used in another sense, for instance to describe the trepidation or muscular vibration felt by an agent when an astral projection comes to an end abruptly. The double of amputated limbs. If a leg is amputated, some persons continue to feel the existence of the amputated limb, some only for a short time, others for the rest of their lives, but the majority lose this feeling gradually. Medical science believes this to be an illusion caused by the nerves which are severed. Generally this may be so, but more sensitive persons show supernormal knowledge in this connection. In one case, the amputated hand of a man had been put in a box with sawdust and buried. The man who did not know this declared that he felt sawdust in his non-existing hand, and a nail which had hurt a finger, causing so much pain that he could not sleep. When the box was finally unearthed, it was found that a nail had actually hurt a finger. Another man, known to D'Urville, whose arm had been amputated, could, with his eyes bandaged, tell when a burning candle was applied to his materially non-existing fingers. Many clairvoyants have seen phantom counterparts of amputated limbs. Even photographs of such have been published, but these experiments should be repeated. Cases have been reported of people who, shortly after the amputation of a leg, forgot to use their crutches and walked several steps on their phantom legs. It sounds unbelievable but might be explained by the unconscious action of the etheric counterpart, similar to other physical effects reported, or a kind of telekinesis. We have mentioned Duprell's interest in these feelings of integrity. In his book on biolocation, Botsano divides the facts into four classes and devotes the whole of the first class to the double of amputated limbs, which shows the importance he ascribed to this kind of phenomenon. Next headline, the subjective aspect. The more common forms of projection have a subjective character, as in the examples reported from my own field of observation. Among the many causes producing projections is illness, especially spotted typhus. From this small corner of the whole field, medical men try to explain away the existence of a subtle body. They call seeing oneself hoscopy or autoscopy. The theory advanced assumes that everybody has a mental picture of one's bodily appearance and then, due to illness, may see a hallucination of this mental picture. This theory is inadequate because the objective reality of the double has too often been ascertained. Therefore, such theoretically postulated hallucinations must be exceptions, if they actually should happen at all. Projections may also be caused by anesthetics, such as chloroform, further by accidents, by pain and torture. A better knowledge is possible if a healthy agent has a number of projections, is capable of analyzing them and takes the trouble to publish his experiences. Among those projectionists who have made a study of the subject, the best known are, Oliver Fox, born 1885. Wrote articles since 1914 and about 1937 published a book Astral Projection, RAM, fictitious name, a Frenchman who in 1926 published Le Médecin de l'Âme, translated into English with the better title Practical Astral Projection, Caroline D. Larson, living in USA, in 1927 published My Travels in the Spirit World, Sylvan Muldoon, an American who with Hayard Carrington, psychical researcher, published several books, the first being The Projection of the Astral Body, 1929. These books contain a wealth of information and they agree in many details but also show differences between one individual and another. Only a few aspects of these reports can be summarized here. Further, another modern witness to these facts can but be mentioned, J. H. Whiteman, who seems to have had over 2,000 pertinent experiences himself and published an article in the Proceedings of the Society of Psychical Research, in May, 1956. Next headline, Experiences of Mr. Oliver Fox. Mr. Fox discusses the interrelation of dreams and astral projection. He recommends the experimenter to arouse his critical faculty while dreaming so as to know, because of some inconsistency, that he has a dream, which then becomes a dream of knowledge and constitutes a new level of consciousness. He describes the false awakening out of a dream, when one feels oneself to be awake, but in fact is in a state of trance, connected with strange sensations. Mr. Fox believes the art of conscious projection to be purely mental. While projected, he could see the body he was traveling in, seemingly clothed in many ways, but never naked. He never saw his material body nor the cord. His sensation of sometimes leaving his body through a small trapdoor in the head is similarly reported by other persons, and is probably related to other reports which speak of moving through a tunnel or a funnel-shaped opening. Like other projectionists, Mr. Fox stresses the sense of reality one has during a projection and its difference from a dream. Though his experiences were only subjective, he witnessed one experimental case, when a lady friend succeeded in appearing in his room during the night. He saw her plainly and she remembered her astral visit, and was able to describe unusual details of his room and furniture, though she had never visited it in the flesh. On another occasion, he appeared to the same lady in her room in the early morning but could not remember it himself. Ram's experiences. Ram's book is based on experiences which began in 1912. I was informed that he passed over a few years ago, but his identity and further details of his life are withheld for family reasons. To develop the faculty, he practiced concentration, rhythmical breathing, relaxation, entering the silence. More important, he thinks, is the living of moral life, exclusion of egoistical desires and the practice of altruistic love. He advises a projectionist to explore first within the confines of his room. The furniture is seen in a peculiar, phosphorescent light. He emphasizes the absolute subjective reality of a projection, which he calls a brutal fact. If one wants to go farther away, the substance which you use for your double returns to the material body, and it is with a more etheric form that you reach space, a statement similar to D'Urville's findings.